Shayna here, back with another exciting episode of the Adventure Options Podcast. You want adventures and you have options. In this episode, I interview Eric Spiniello, co-founder of Vopo. Eric is half Indonesian, half Venezuelan, total surfer dude living in Australia and concerned about wilderness conservation. As you can imagine, we have a great time exploring his story. Stick around to find out what make Eric say, "That's a pretty awesome question, actually." I try. This episode is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. There are 4.6 billion web pages out there. Make sure people want to visit yours. Go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventure, WRITERS.agency. Now for the show. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about Vopo. Is that how you say it, or do you say V-O-P-O?
We say Vopo, yeah. And it's short for Vox Populi, which is a Latin phrase for the voice of the people.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. I didn't even know that. Say the Latin word again.
Vox Populi.
Vox Populi, am I saying it correctly?
I'm not 100% sure because I don't know how to speak Latin. So, like, you know, I'm not sure if that's the way that it should be pronounced, but
I don't speak Latin either. So we're going to go ahead and say, yep, that's exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Sounds good.
So you are one of the co-founders of Vopo. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So we started Vopo, Charlotte and I. So Charlotte Mellis is an incredible woman. She's doing right now her studies, well, her extended studies in neuroscience, looking at the relationship between wilderness and humans. And then, I guess, connecting that into Vopo and being how can our expeditions then, you know, have a personal impact on the people that come from their connection into really wild places. So, so I started the company with her and it's been a really long, incredible journey.
So tell me how you and Charlotte met and what the relationship is there and then how you came up with the idea of Vopo.
Absolutely, yeah. So Charlotte and I actually are together in business and in crime, I guess. And we pretty much met each other, and from the moment that we met each other, we started Vopo. So it was almost like a life calling in that sense. We were in the Sunshine Coast of Australia. We were just, camping, surfing, freediving, and, doing our studies and working. And we really wanted to create positive impact in the world. So that was about 4 to 5 years ago. And we went through a bit of an exploration process, building a bit of a online community. We decided that experiences is something that can truly have a personal impact in people. And that's why we decided to do, highly challenging experiential expeditions around the world.
So that's how Vopo started. And did you start giving, were you the tour guide at the beginning? Or what was your role from the very beginning of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So the primary purpose for Vopo to exist is to safeguard Earth remaining wilderness and to empower underserved small villages. And at the beginning, it was more of our relationship with the NGOs and how that, and with the local NGOs and how that may, you know, play out. And then our expeditions come later. At the beginning, we were running the expeditions ourselves. But we are going through a bit of a process of training the locals to be able to run it themselves.
And so tell me which NGOs you're talking about. Which ones were the ones that you were working with at the beginning?
Well, we have a local NGO that we partnered with, at least one, but in some of the places that we work with, we have more than one. And in each of the places that we run our expeditions, we have one partnering NGO. So for example, in the Mentawai Islands, we partner with Yayasan Suku Mentawai, which is an NGO looking to preserve the well-being of the local indigenous Mentawai people. So yeah, that's one example. And in the Arnavan Islands, we partner with the Arnavan's Marine Community Marine Park. And again, it's a conservation authority looking to preserve not only, I guess, the environmental wealth of the area, but also the well-being of the local villages around the area. Yeah.
So did you know from a small child that you had an interest in safeguarding the wilderness, or is this something that evolved throughout your life? Like, what made you passionate about this?
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good question. I mean, I grew up in Venezuela, and my mom is a marine biologist. And so from a really young age, I believe, well, I have a feeling that she really pushed, you know, or I guess not really pushed, but I guess just really provided a sense of appreciation of nature. We would, you know, explore different places in the world, really. And yeah, so I guess that maybe inspired the calling for Vopo and, yeah, what we all do.
Yeah. Oh, your mom is going to love that she's the one who inspired you to do what you do. You're going to have to let her know.
Yeah, I think it's definitely been my mom that has inspired. But then obviously it's been carried through my life. So then I went and studied environmental management and sustainable development. And then after that, I continued working as a consultant or private or in government in, you know, different projects specializing in waste. So I guess it's just been a one linear progression into doing what I do now. Yeah.
Perfect. So you mentioned that you traveled a lot when you were a child. Where were some of your favorite places to go when you were little?
I really love some of the remote Caribbean islands that we used to go to. I think also staying close to home was really beautiful. We used to go to pretty unexplored coastlines in Venezuela, which were really beautiful. And, you know, like the culture was just really rich. And, you know, you couldn't see any tourists. And, you know, I guess it's just life there. I think those were my favorite as a child. But nowadays, it's just pretty much just jungle and really crazy islands in Asia Pacific, I would say. That's what I, yeah.
The remote experiences, I've noticed that's kind of a theme with Vopo, is you want it to be remote. Why is that?
It is to put people in a challenging place. And then, you know, when they come out of that experience, they feel empowered that they were able to not only be in a really remote wild place, but they were also able to connect with a land and a culture that they may have not been able to do on their own. Because of course there's risks. There's also, I guess, a certain element of going with a group can be safer. So that's why we like to do this, you know, this type of tours, expeditions.
Tell me about one of your remote locations and maybe some of the challenges you've had in getting into those locations and keeping people safe.
Absolutely, yeah. So the Arnavan Islands in the Solomon Islands is one of these places. And I guess there's a challenge of flying, you know. So when you fly into the capital, your plane is probably the only plane in the whole airport. And then when you go into other islands, then you start going into really small planes. Some of the runways aren't paved. So, you know, like you start playing with, you know, weather. So whether it's safe to fly. So these are all small things that we do consider. But yeah, it's a bit of a process that we've identified on how to, you know, like how do you make a decision.
I imagine that would be really challenging as a company to have to think about things like that. Like, can our airplane land on a muddy field on a rainy day and have to overcome that? I imagine that would be really hard. So what do people get out of going to remote locations versus, let's say, you know, somewhere that's very well known?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's because we work in these areas to provide support in waste management, but then we also provide support in entrepreneurship. So we help these villages to create small businesses that can then support our expeditions. But then that way, they have their systems to make money out of. Yeah. So I guess because we develop these sort of microcosms of social enterprises in the places that we go to, then I guess that within itself is a really unique experience.
No, I definitely think so. I love that you are giving the local people opportunities to become entrepreneurs themselves. Have you felt like the local people have been receptive to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, creating a livelihood is really important. And there is the presence of money within these places that we work with. And you know, it is a better alternative. You know, sustainable tourism is a better alternative for them than, you know, going into mining or logging or poaching. So they appreciate any support that is given from people from within the outside. So I think they definitely do appreciate that support and you know, welcome us with open arms. And I guess our approach is a bit different. You know, we form a bond with this, you know, small communities, as opposed to, you know, coming in, you know, giving aid and then, you know, going away.
Yeah. Have you found that any of these communities are hesitant to have a bunch of foreigners come in and kind of move into their little village?
We don't really move into the villages, you know. No, I think they really appreciate it, you know, and you know, it's not like someone is living there full time. I guess, you know, we work with them for like about 6 to 8 months prior us going there, you know, explaining them what the whole experience is going to be about, how can they benefit from this, and perhaps even, you know, looking to what are the goals of the region as a whole. So, I mean, it's a symbiotic relationship that we have with these communities, as opposed to, you know, coming in there, you know, having a feed on their village and then, you know, going home.
I love that. I love that you're empowering them and showing them how tourism can be a benefit and not just something that comes and takes over. So, tell me give me some examples of some of the things that you do on these expeditions.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, people can engage on the ground projects, and that may be, you know, like being part of a workshop, being part of a cleanup, and as well, you are engaging in, you know, like activities like surfing, free diving, spearfishing. You take part in some of the cultural ceremonies of the land.
I noticed on your website that you're in 4 different locations: Indonesia, the Philippines, the Solomon Islands, and Australia. Regardless of the fact that you live in Australia, which location is your favorite?
Yeah, I think each one of them really presents something special. I mean, and the indigenous communities within each of these places, I mean, I personally have almost an emotional connection with them, you know. So I just couldn't pick, you know, like they're all really, really special.
I'm asking you to choose your favorite child. Is that what's happening?
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much. The Mentawai is very, very, very special to me.
Why?
My father is from Sumatra, and so I grew up going to Indo a lot. The Mentawai people are an indigenous group that I always really looked up to as a kid. And I guess being an adult and being able to go into the jungle, meet these tribes, and now, you know, be working with them and working with NGOs that actually care about their mental and physical and, you know, and you know, the yeah, working with NGOs that deeply care about them, that's really special to me. And then also, you know, I love surfing. So, you know, the Mentawai Islands is a pretty well-known spot for incredible surf. So I think that ticks all the boxes to me. But again, you know, like in the Solomon Islands, you know, the small communities that we work with, they're absolutely beautiful and they have so much to give. And the land is just unreal, you know, like when you fly through across, you know, when you're boating across these islands, you just realize how beautiful, wild and raw this place is. And the people have so much to give. So that's a really incredible place as well, I would say. Yeah, so it is almost like choosing, you know, like, you know, who's your favorite child?
I imagine that would be hard. And plus, yeah, you don't want to make one of the other ones feel like they're not the favorite child.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. No, definitely. Yeah. So, have you ever been to Indonesia?
I have not. So describe it for me.
Wow. Indonesia is an incredible place. You know, you can tell that it has an ancient culture. You know, it's fast, it's wild, it's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. And I mean, when you look at Indonesia as a whole, there's many different subgroups and subcultures within Indonesia. So it's really hard to call it one country. You have all the way from, West Papua, and the people are darker and they're obviously are more similar to people in PNG, but you can go all the way to North Sumatra and they look a little bit more, you know, with traits of almost like Malaysian traits. So it's a really different, it's a country that embodies many different cultures, I guess.
It's very diverse.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So how many different expeditions do you do just within that?
Oh, so our expeditions are based on our sustainability grant projects. So we only work with 5 different regions, and Indonesia is one of the regions, and the Mentawai Islands is one of the regions that we work in Indonesia. So at the moment, we only have so much capacity to provide support to some of these places. So we only work with 1 community in Indonesia.
Yeah. So do you go at specific times of the year?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So our expeditions follow almost like a yearly migration. So the time that we go to Indonesia is around October to December. And the rest of the year is pretty much just, you know, really preparing that expedition, but also running the projects on the ground, working with the local communities, doing workshops. It takes a lot of work, but, you know, like it's pretty, pretty incredible work. So it's good.
So tell me about some of the projects that you've done.
Yeah, totally. So, ocean plastic is a massive problem, and as we know, and we know that about 80% of ocean plastic pollution comes from land-based sources, and that means rivers, coastlines, and of course, the only 20% comes from shipping, etc. So within that 80%, we know that more than half, around 60%, comes from only 5 countries, and that's Indonesia, China, Vietnam, Thailand, and the Philippines, right? So that's East Asia as a region almost, right? So and the reason why there's so much plastic pollution, ocean plastic pollution coming from these countries is because they've had a recent economic boom, but they don't have the waste management infrastructure to really support, you know, all the amount of plastic that is being consumed, right? So yeah, we have created a holistic waste management model for island communities. So we're introducing waste to energy micro plants that can treat the plastic and then use the thermal heat to boil water for safe drinking. But then that also fits within the holistic waste management model that we provide waste education programs. We provide waste entrepreneurship programs. So we also support the local community to develop small businesses that can create a waste management industry within a small island. So I guess that's one of the projects that we do. And I guess we call it rogue plastic, and it's to create critical waste systems that can support a clean and proud environment, I guess.
I love that. I love that you saw the problem, and instead of just saying, hey, we have this huge problem, that you actually came up with a solution for it that is doable, and that you see where the loopholes are, why we're having such a big problem. And have you seen that these communities that you're going into are receptive of your waste management solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is not something that takes, a couple of months. This is really a 5 to 10 year long program.
Are you telling me you can't clean up the ocean in a couple months? Come on, Eric.
Yeah.
Let's reach for the sky.
Yeah, totally. So the ocean cleanup is doing a pretty incredible job, I think, and they just released their system 001 to start cleaning up the ocean. And that's pretty amazing, but we need to turn off the tap, of plastics flowing into the oceans. And the fascinating thing is that if you look deep enough, it's a sustainable development issue. It's underserved regions of the world that do not have waste services. And I mean, of course, in here in Australia, Europe, in the USA, we pay our rates and, the bin man picks up our waste and we don't really know where that goes. But there's a complex system operating based on our taxes and our rates and all this. And obviously, these communities just do not have that infrastructure. And unfortunately, a lot of the single-use products are being introduced into these communities. And plastic is a safe way to, I guess, move these products across the world. So they just having a pretty massive problem, where there's an introduction to plastic waste, which is a product or a resource that takes a lot of technology to be made, and then they don't have that. They don't have a method to really treat it, like pile it all up, move it around, treat it, in a safe way.
Right. So when somebody comes and goes on an expedition with you, how are they involved in that waste management part? Are they actually on the ground teaching and helping, or is it that their money supports the programs that then turns around and teaches the people?
Absolutely. So it's actually both ways. They directly financially support the projects, but then they also are involved in, running waste education programs. They're, doing small cleanups. I mean, of course, they won't be involved in the highly technical side of the ground project, which may be installing one of the, installing one of the microplants, but they are definitely being involved within the project.
That's fantastic that you can go and explore the world and learn a new culture, but also know that the money that you're spending there is supporting such a good cause. I think that's just fantastic.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's a niche, I guess. Yeah.
But it's so good. I love it. I know that I asked you to pick your favorite place, and that was really hard for you. And I don't know if we even got an answer out of that. But I do want to hear one of your favorite people that you have met through working with these villages, and maybe how the relationship you have with them has grown out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty awesome question, actually. So in the Mentawai Islands, there's an incredible man. His name is August Dongyat. I hope he actually, hears this. But so he is a part of Yayasan Suku Mentawai, which is the NGO looking to well, supporting the indigenous people. He also runs the Mentawai Ecotourism Program, which is a program developed to provide tours up in the jungle into these tribes, but it's done in a highly sustainable, conscientious manner. And he's also an indigenous man to the Mentawai Islands. He was introduced to me by an incredible man. His name is Rob Henry, and he's a filmmaker and indigenous right activist here in Australia. He did a documentary called As Worlds Divide, which explores the relationship between the indigenous Mentawai people and the development of the area, and how there's a lot of issues, you know, social, mental well-being issues. So it's quite an interesting documentary. But yeah, Rob Henry introduced me to August, and I guess after being into the jungle, being guided by him, being explained about the culture with him, he's just a incredible, strong, funny, adventurous Indonesian man that loves to take people deep into the jungle. So he's definitely one of my favorite characters, or you know, one of my favorite people that I've met.
Yeah. And does he lead some of the expeditions, or is he not? Is he involved in his own stuff?
No, absolutely. So he's involved in the expeditions, and we're running one to the Mentawai Islands in December, and he will pretty much be joining the crew all along. And pretty much for every expedition that we have, we try as much as possible to have a scholarship position. And so far we've had one for every expedition that we've run. And it's a local person that can apply for a scholarship to be engaged with the tour group along the way. And what we find is that the people that come on the expeditions are able to really tap deeply into the culture, because there's someone that lives and breathes, you know, the environment there. So so he will be one of these, you know, person or I guess people that will join the expedition.
Oh, that's fascinating. I love that you have given an opportunity both for the person who lives in these remote places to join in, and also for people coming from outside to have a personal connection or relationship with these scholarship recipients. I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
And also we have a really good Facebook. We also have a really good Facebook thing, you know, so we're always, you know, yeah, he's always chatting to me on Facebook. And so, yeah, Facebook is a really amazing way to chat with a lot of these people. Because, there's internet access, and everyone seems to have a smartphone nowadays. So that's pretty useful.
Wow. Even in these remote wilderness areas, they have smartphones?
Yeah. The people that work for the NGOs and stuff, they do. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another incredible person. His name is Zo Olangi. That's another shout out. So he was our Solomon Island scholarship position. So besides being a doctor, he in the PNG Highlands, he is a filmmaker. So we released a scholarship position for a Solomon Islander to join the expedition and, you know, do some shooting and stuff. And he was one of the persons that applied, and we granted to him. And he's just incredibly wonderful, gentle, big, strong Islander man that, you know, besides being a doctor, is a filmmaker.
That is quite the difference in careers. How do you go from being a doctor to a filmmaker?
He just doesn't sleep. Yeah.
Apparently.
He just doesn't sleep, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, he does both. And I mean, yeah, if you follow his stuff, he can shoot anything from a hospital to, you know, like really remote mountain tribal people in the, you know, PNG Highlands. It's pretty incredible stuff.
And then he can help you when you get bit by a snake or some random spider.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. When I come out and do a tour, I'm requesting that your recipient be a doctor and a masseuse. So I
okay.
can.
Okay. We will definitely cater for that.
Right. Start vetting people right now.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. I love to hear when people are just so ambitious in their life. This has just been so informative. I just love to hear what you guys are doing at VOPO and the kind of expeditions that you're offering people. And I will definitely put in the show notes your website and different links that people can click on to be able to join one of your expeditions. I always like to end my show by asking the person that I'm interviewing to leave us or leave today's traveler with their piece of advice. Like, what piece of advice would you give today's traveler or today's adventurer?
So I have a quote by David Attenborough, which I'm just going to look for it right now because it's actually a pretty powerful and beautiful quote.
And you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to say something that he's like, dude, I didn't say that. So David Attenborough, my piece of advice, I guess, is a quote from David Attenborough. And it goes, "No one will protect what they don't care about, and no one will care about what they have never experienced." So I guess my piece of advice is get out there in the world, you know, always be mindful of other people, be empathetic, but really get out there, experience the world fully, you know, its rawness and wildness.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on, Eric. And I wish you the best of luck with all of your expeditions.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure to be part of this podcast. I think it's amazing that you're interviewing so many different characters within the tourism industry. It really shines through the diversity of people out there.
Shayna here. Oh man, that was fun. Who knew waste management would be such a cool subject to talk about? My takeaway from Eric is that being a sincere, genuine person is what moves mountains. Remember to visit adventurewriters.agency to join my mailing list and get updates when a new podcast episode airs. Till next time, Selamat tinggal.